Continuamos con nuestra emisión en directo, and now we switch to English because we have the pleasure of connecting with Bob Hardy, founding member, bassist for Franz Ferdinand, who are playing a sold-out show tonight at Razzmatazz in the big room. Bob, how are you doing, man?
Hello. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very well. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Take it away, Ben.
And I was just going to, I mean, very, how's the tour going? You played Madrid last night. Did you play A Coruña before?
We did, yeah. We're 3 days in. So we did Lisbon, A Coruña, and then Madrid. And they've all been great, yeah. Last night we played at Riviera in Madrid, which is a great club. And yeah, it's just really fun.
Do you make, because you know, Spain has been a country that, you know, a very a strong territory for Franz Ferdinand's history ever since you played your first show at Primavera Sound when we were still in El Pueblo Español. Ever since then, I mean, you've been coming so frequently. So when you go to a city like Madrid, does it feel incredibly familiar, or do you notice many of the changes? How do you feel when you come back to Spain?
Yeah, it feels familiar. I mean, it definitely over the last 20 years, it's definitely got more touristy in the middle. But you know, everywhere has. It feels very at home. Someone told me the other day that we had played 55 shows in Spain. Wow. And so last night would have been our 56th and tonight's our 57th. So yeah, it's quite a lot of shows. And it's like a second home in lots of ways. Actually, we played Primavera in the summer of 2004. But in the December 2003, we played the small room in Razzmatazz.
Ah, nice.
That was our first show. That was the first show in Spain.
That was the first show. That's true.
Yeah.
In the because I think the album hadn't even come out, if I'm not mistaken. No.
We were first on, and then it was Electra Lane, if you remember Electra Lane from Brighton in England. Yes. And Death in Vegas, I think, for headlining.
Whoa.
Wow.
So your latest album, The Human Fear, came out in January. It's a really interesting name. What's going with the name? What is The Human Fear exactly?
Yeah, well, the name is taken from a lyric from a song, Hooked, which was the last song to have lyrics written for it. And the opening lines are, I've got the fear, I've got the human fear. And the song really, I guess, Alex wrote lyrics, is kind of about the kind of the existential fear that we all have as human beings and how that can change once you have a kid. I don't have a kid, Alex does. But then when we were looking for a title for the record and looking back across the songs that had already been written, The Human Fear kind of stuck out as quite an interesting title for the album. I mean, I think when you first hear it, you might think it's some kind of like doom metal record or something. It's very much not. It's quite a like fun kind of energetic record. But I think when we're talking about the human fear, we're thinking about it as like fear being something that you have to go through to get to all the best things in life and overcoming that. Because you know, if you don't put yourself in a position where you feel fear at some point, then you're not going to end up doing anything. So we kind of want to celebrate it as an idea of just like a symptom of being alive, you know, to remind yourself you're alive. You put yourself in the situations where you feel fear, like, you know, when you go on roller coasters or jump out of an aeroplane, I imagine, you know, there's overcoming a certain amount of fear, but then you have this amazing buzz, which is actually similar to going on stage sometimes, you know, if you're playing like, some high profile festival or something, and it's quite, you know, like, you know, big stage. It can be quite nervous and before you go on, but then after that you get this enormous rush of kind of adrenaline, I guess.
Do you still get a little bit of the fear every time it's 5 minutes before stage time with all the shows?
A little bit, yeah. It just depends on the show and depends on, like, because we're playing a lot of the new album for the first time. The last few days, we played like three songs for the first time ever. That's a little bit more than your, you know, mid-tour kind of, when you're kind of road hardened, you get a bit more nervous. And then certain shows, like if there's like something that has a tremendous cultural significance, like, you know, if we're playing like, you know, Glastonbury or Primavera Sound or something, it's like that kind of, like, you know, that little bit more of a kind of, bit more nerves involved in that. On live TV and radio, you know, that kind of thing. But generally, not as much as when I first started.
Well, I was going to say, because when you first started, the legend goes that basically Alex taught you how to, you were his mate, you taught him you how to play bass. Is that true, or is that just a sort of...
No, that's true. Yeah, no, I didn't play any instruments as a teenager at all. I was 21 when I first picked up the bass, and it was quite a fast rise, really. It was like, I think it was, would have been like autumn 2001, when Alex and I were like, well, let's start a band. And then our first gig was in May 2002. And then we made a record in summer 2003 and we're like playing in Glastonbury in 2004. So it was quite fast. And I was very ropey for quite a long time. And it was quite terrifying. And it was just basically getting through it for a long time. It was like every time I came on stage, I like, got away with it, you know. And it was quite a number of years before I felt really confident on stage and like would call myself a bass player.
Because the bass lines aren't just simple bass lines either. They're kind of, they're adventurous.
No. I'm a very visual person. I don't really consider myself to be musical. Like I started painting at art school and I don't have a great ear for music particularly, which is one of the reasons that stopped me from like picking up a guitar when I was a kid. My uncle was trying to teach me how to tune a guitar and he was like, you know, can you hear the difference? You know, there's notes. I'm like, no. It was just basically I was memorizing patterns on the fretboard. That's kind of like, that was what I was doing because that's how I see the world, you know.
Talking of the Human Fear, the opening song is Audacious. I believe you said that it encapsulates what you think being in a band should be. What did you mean by that?
Did I say that?
I believe so, yeah, according to Apple Music, I think.
Yeah, I think that it's... I kind of see the song as being about when the world is kind of falling apart around you and everything just seems completely bleak, that the most audacious thing you can do is just keep going. But then also, I think that making art in any level, like... it is an audacious act because it's not something that anyone's asked you to do, you know? So it's like doing something because anyway, you know, and that's an audacious move. And just getting on stage with an instrument and saying, hey, everybody stop what you're doing. Look at me. That's quite an audacious, look what we've made. You know, that's quite an audacious act. And it goes across the arts. So I think that, you know, if you're making paintings and you are exhibiting them, that's an audacious act.
It sounds to me from what you said that, you would never make an album just to make an album, right? Big, you, there always has to be a reason behind it, some way in which you're driven to it, right?
Yeah, generally. We never finish an album tour and then arrange to meet up. Let's meet up in 6 weeks and start working on a new record. You know, we never do that, which is sometimes why it's a bit, there's quite gaps between records. But generally, what will happen is Alex will get to a point where Alex will send through some demos. And amongst them, there'll be a song or two that, and I was like, ooh, that's really good. I'd like to be a part of a band that makes that and work, you know, brings that to the world. And that's kind of that's my motivation for making albums. It's like, oh, and that sounds like that could be really cool. I want to be in that band. So it's like a recommitment every time, you know.
And a lot of the new album was recorded live. Do you always do that?
Not always. We did do back in the first record was very much like that. And the second record, a lot of that too. But it was different. The process was slightly different for the second record because we were writing at the same time as we were recording it, which was difficult. The third record was less live and more kind of like built up. And what happened was when in 2014, we recorded an album with Sparks for a project we called FFS. And because of the studio time for that was so limited, we only had like 2 weeks. And because they live in LA, we hadn't had much time together. So the songs were all written and demoed. And then for 10 days before we went into the studio, we just went to a rehearsal space in London and just really, really rehearsed the songs and so we could play them like a live band. And then we went into the studio and really quickly recorded everything, you know, 2 songs a day.
Wow.
And it was great. And it was really, it brought a really great energy, which is a similar way to how we recorded the first record. So from then on, as Franz Ferdinand, we've gone back to that kind of process. So this time around, all the songs were written, demoed. We all, you know, we rehearsed them. Everyone knew what they were doing. And then once you well rehearsed to the point where you kind of like, you know, you've got muscle memory for the songs. And then when you go in and when we hit record, you're not worrying about what you're doing. You're just kind of performing. And I think it captures that kind of live band energy that you get maybe from a live show. There's a confidence in there and an energy.
I wanted to ask about FFS, actually, which is an album I absolutely adore, because I love Franz Ferdinand and Spark, so it works really well. What were they? They seem such a brilliantly unusual duo. What were they like to work with?
Yeah, really fun. I really enjoyed it. We'd known them by that point for like 10 years or so. I hadn't seen a lot of them, but we'd bump into them from time to time. Working with them was great. It was like, it was up until that point, I'd only ever played in one band, just Franz Ferdinand, with the same, you know, three other people. And then to bring in a new songwriter like Ron, new vocalists, and it was really interesting for me. And just the way that they at that point, they were like 40 years into their career, and they still had this like energy and like hunger for like new music, for new sounds, and just really engaged in making art and being in a band still. And it was quite inspiring, yeah.
And talking of which, there's been a few lineup changes in Franz Ferdinand over the recent years. I was wondering if that had kind of energized you as well, like playing with new people.
Yeah, I think so. There's you know, Audrey and Dino, this is the first full album that they've been on. And it was really great process. In many ways, it felt like kind of like a new band in some ways, you know. It's like everything feels fresh again. And we toured the Hits to the Head, which is the greatest hits, in between our last two albums. And so we were quite well honed as a band and really good at being Franz Ferdinand. And so then going into the studio with that kind of like fresh energy was nice. And it's nice going on tour, because we spent 20 years kind of like touring and going to Spain like 55 times or whatever. It's then to see it fresh through someone's eyes, for like someone's experience for the first time. Like when Audrey came on the road with us, you kind of like, you have a new appreciation of, actually, no, this is really, really cool that you know we get to do this. And it's been a nice time.
Speaking of greatest hit, you know, releasing a greatest hits album, how did you feel when, you know, you reach a stage where you release a greatest hits album? You know, it's kind of a landmark in your career, isn't it?
It's something you contractually obliged to do. And it was nice. It was nice to go out and just like play all the bangers in a row. It was fine. I think by the end of it, we were kind of ready just to move on and like make some new music. Mm-hmm. I think really the what it did for us is kind of, we came off the road with an understanding of what made all of the singles and the sort of big songs in the back catalogue exciting. And then going into the studio to record this, I was like, that's what Franz Ferdinand do. And then we kind of ended up embracing our identity as Franz Ferdinand. In fact, we made a conscious choice during the writing process for Human Fear, just to be unapologetically Franz Ferdinand and make it as much part, you know, like wear our identity on our sleeve. And I think when you do that as well, when you make in the creative process, it frees you up to let in more esoteric sides of your tastes. So on this record, there's a song called Black Eyelashes, which is probably the most overtly Greek influenced song we've ever made, because Alex is half Greek. And so there have been times in the past, like on a song like 40 Feet, for example, where elements of that have crept in, but nothing quite as overt as this. And I think once you're open and you're comfortable with who you are, then you can explore the more, you know, esoteric bits of your personality.
Well, you said it was about being open to being Franz Ferdinand, being who you are. Maybe this is a hard thing to answer, but like, what does that mean to you? What kind of qualities?
What do you mean, musical qualities?
Yeah, well, you know, when you were saying that doing the greatest hits album tour kind of, you know, convinced you that you wanted to be very much yourselves, very Franz Ferdinand. Yeah. What did that mean musically?
Yeah, I think going back to what the original conversations that Alex and I had when we were working together in a kitchen and talking about the idea of band before the band had even played a gig or like had a rehearsal. And I think what the key to Franz Ferdinand is it's like dance floor friendly. So like the groove is really important. Big hooks. In like musically, like big guitar riffs, keyboard riffs, and then lyrics that are about something and that make you feel emotion, that can convey complex emotions in very simple and direct ways in a way you haven't heard before, and I think that but simultaneously. Songs that deal with complex ideas that you can, on first listen, you can just enjoy on a surface level and it can be very direct. But then with repeated listens, you know, you can delve deeper maybe into references or meanings within lyrics. I'm a very lyric focused guy. That's been also my route into music. So that's always quite a significant part of it for me.
The band's been going, if Wikipedia is to be believed, for 23 years since 2002.
Yeah.
Very few bands last 23 years. Is there a secret to it and keeping inspired after all these years?
Yeah, I mean, I think the secret... Well, I mean, the hardest bit about being in a band is interpersonal kind of relationships. You know, with like four people, like it's like a marriage, you know? And so being... having respect for each other, having the odd... like conversation when you're pissed off about something and bring it into the open, not just letting it fester and like boil away under the surface, which is the same as any relationship really. I think that's the biggest task.
Are you still in touch with Paul or Nick?
Both of them. I mean, Paul lives like a 10-minute walk away from me, so I bump into him on the street and we text like constantly. So yeah, no, Nick lives in Germany, but I do see him from time to time.
Yeah. And also, so many other bands that came up when around the time that you debuted and came up there, some of those bands went on indefinite hiatus, but they're all celebrating 20-year anniversaries. Indie sleaze is a thing, and all of a sudden Gen Z is excited about having, you know.
You love indie sleaze.
I love indie sleaze revival because I was in the thick of it. have you been running into old colleagues, other bands that you got on well with that you hadn't seen, you know, in the festival circuit last year and stuff that you were like, oh, tough to run into again?
No one that's been away. I mean, trying to think. I mean, I saw Art Brute play in Glasgow a couple of months ago. Yeah, and like you know, I love Eddie, and like I hadn't seen him for a while.
Eddie.
I don't know. I think the bands that we're friends with and that were part of our sort of scene, I'm still in like talk to most of them anyway. So it's not. It wasn't any kind of like surprises, like, oh, I'd forgotten you existed. You know, it was just like, just like, hello, how are you?
I have this vision of Glasgow of just it being all bands knocking around, but I'm sure that's...
I had that vision of Glasgow before I moved there. That's one of the reasons that I moved. I grew up in Bradford. I was a massive fan of like the Glasgow music scene. Bel Sebastian, Mogwai, Delgado's, Arab Strap, all that, and the old Chemical Underground kind of stuff.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager in Bradford, it just seemed like this indie Disney world. And I had friends that had moved up there to go to university, and they were saying, oh yeah, we went to the quiz in Nice and Sleazy's downstairs, and there was a singing round, and Aidan Moffat got up and sang Elvis, and then on one corner there was a table, and it was Mogwai were there just doing the quiz, and then you know, and I was like, this is insane. That doesn't happen in Bradford, you know. And there's some truth to it, you know. It's not a big city, and there's a lot of music, and there's not that many bars and places to hang out. So you do kind of like, the music scene's a real thing there, yeah.
I've got to say, boring though I am, I just Googled best bands from Bradford, and The Cult has come up.
The
and
cult,
then,
yeah.
And yeah. Yeah, then lots of people I don't really know. Oh,
Tasman Archer.
My God.
Sorry, who?
Tasman Archer. She had that hit.
Oh, yeah.
I blame you for the moonlit skies.
Was that No, there's quite a few, you know. I mean, it's like Terrorvision.
Terrorvision.
Oh, yeah, Tequila. Yeah.
Was that Oblivion?
Smokey from the 70s.
Living Next Door to Someone? Is that Smokey or am I? No. Okay, no.
Our trivia is a little bit. Yeah, we know more about Glasgow.
Yeah. But look, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you. The concert is tonight at Razzmatazz. It's sold out, so good luck with it. I have one final question. I was looking at your Wikipedia because, of course I was. And it says very, very specifically. Your plectrum is a custom 60mm magnesium Teflon amalgam. My God, how important is this plectrum to you?
It's not true. I don't
it's
know
not true.
It's very funny. I mean, that's the thing with Wikipedia. Wikipedia changes so much because it's just like edited by random people. It's funny though. I like the idea that I have these strange custom picks.
Well, it goes further. You apparently use round wound medium gauge strings, which I don't really know.
I do have a round wound. I have a spare bass at home with round wound strings on, but I don't. I think I just use whatever the opposite of that is on stage. I'm not really a technical guy. I don't really know what gauge strings I use. I got my technos.
I'm slightly disappointed. I wanted to get into magnesium Teflon.
They're just plastic, green plastic, and I think they're 8mm. No, 0.8mm.
Okay.
8mm is very. No, hang on. Yeah, 0.8mm.
Yeah, that's quite thick. Yeah, it's quite thick.
It's quite thick. It's like a bass pick. Yeah.
Well, you make a lot of noise on the bass, you know.
Yeah, you got to, thick strings.
Anyway, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us, and I hope the rest of the tour goes really well.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
No worries.